Hey, do you prefer to find the joy in life, or do you just want some help with that? If so, you're in the right place. So come on in and join the Joy Bunny clan. This is the My Slice of Life podcast. Hello and welcome to the My Slice of Life podcast. My name is Sharon and I am your Highland host. We're on season four, and this season I'm asking the question, what's so super about the supernatural? This week we're taking a big dive into the world of Bigfoot. See what I did there? But before we get to that, I still need your help. This is a tiny little channel. So if you want to support what I'm doing, please leave me a lovely little review, give it a like, subscribe, whatever you have to do. Use the links in the description to take you to magical places, or just tell someone about it. Now, if they're not really into the supernatural, just let them know I cover a whole range of topics. This isn't a paranormal only channel. Basically, whatever I find interesting in life, it can become a topic. So if you would like a say in what topics get covered, you have to get in touch with me. And the easiest way to do that is actually through the blog. You'll find a contact page and the link to the blog is in the description. Easy peasy. Now, let's crack on with Bigfoot. Bigfoot, it's a big topic. In fact, like so many of the topics I've chosen this season, you could do a whole season just on Bigfoot. So I'm going to give you an overview, and although I've never seen one, there have actually been sightings not too far away from where I live, which I'll be coming to a little bit later on, so stay tuned for that. So whether you like Bigfoot or, like in America, Sasquatch, which apparently I found out that's an anglicised derivative of the word, I think it's Sesquatch, meaning wild man, that's used by the Coast of Salish Indians of the Fraser Valley and parts of Vancouver Island in British Columbia, which I've actually been to Vancouver Island. It's a lovely place, but I did not see any Sesquatch. Probably just as well. I also found out Florida in Southeast America, they call them skunk apes, because everywhere seems to have different names for them. Asia, we have the Yeti. Australia, we have the Yowie. And the UK, and believe it or not, this is new to me, there is the Googwos, the Googway, the Woodwos, quite a few more names for them. In fact, there are many, many names for them. So for this podcast episode, I'm just going to call it Bigfoot. Not Bigfoots, Bigfeet. I think I'll stick with Bigfoot, okay? People have been reporting sightings of these large hair-covered animals, which have a man-like appearance, all over the place. In America, it seems to be the Pacific Northwest in particular, but these sites that have been reported, this isn't anything new. This has been going on for hundreds of years. It's a big thing. It's a big deal here. Many Native American and the First Nation peoples of Canada, their stories in their cultural histories, they talk about peoples of the wilds that aren't human. Now, there are some good stories where they seem to live in harmony. I wouldn't say they're best friends, but, you know, they can live together. But there's a lot of stories where the wild people actually come to the tribes and steal children from the tribe, which sounds horrific. And I found a website, it's called thephilfactor.com. Now, he did an interview with a guy called Rick. I think it's Reles, R-E-L-E-S. He's one of the founding members of Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. It was founded in 1995 and apparently is one of the oldest and largest organizations of its kind. According to this guy, Rick, the hotspots for Bigfoot sightings are Pacific Northwest, like I was mentioning, Kentucky, the Appalachian Mountains, the Upper Midwest, so Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois. Now there's Wisconsin again. Now if you listen to the Dogman episode, you'll hear a lot of things go on in Wisconsin, so good luck to you if you live there. The Georgia Mountains, Tennessee, in fact, anywhere, if there's going to be a vast forest with lots of water nearby, you're going to get Bigfoot according to this guy. This guy, Rick, he does a lot of research in the woods. He does expeditions, he leads expeditions, takes people out to try and get Bigfoot sightings. He also investigates witness reports and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, he says he has seen shadow movements while he's been out doing these things, and these shadows are not human, they're not animal. So he suspects, I would imagine, he's being watched in the woods while he's there. He does say he's actually seen things he couldn't identify as human or animal. So ruling out things like people would say, oh, you just saw a bear. Well, he's saying, no, it definitely wasn't an animal. Certainly nothing that he is aware of. He has heard these creatures, beings out when he's been out doing these expeditions. Now, here's an interesting thing, I think. He says you can feel their presence, and he believes they can project onto humans something called infrasound, which makes you feel a kind of fight or flight response to make you leave their area. Now, I've heard that before. A podcast I've mentioned before is Paranormal Roundtable, and they talk about this infrasound as well. I believe, if I remember correctly, they mentioned it as well with Dogman and all that as well, that these beings can project this infrasound, make us feel so terrified, either for fun, some of them seem to do it quite in a malicious way, or really just to say, look, you're in my territory, get out. So Rick Rellis, he does advise, if you are going into the woods, pay attention. I was very tempted to break into song there, but I'm not going to. So he said, pay attention, listen for whistles, whoops, knocks, howls, stick breaks. You'll hear all this. If you've been on places like YouTube, you'll see people going out and whooping and howling while they're in the woods. And there are some recordings I've heard where you do hear this kind of whoop noise coming back to them. Personally, I don't advise you go out and start whooping in the woods. You might not get Bigfoot, but you do draw attention to yourself. But of all things, if you're doing all this and you're paying attention, you're in the woods, don't get paranoid. Don't start jumping every time, you know, a twig breaks, for example. But do look out for stick structures, which are reported to be built by Bigfoot. So what are these things? Well, although nobody really knows for sure, there are a lot of theories. One of them being it's a kind of communication between Bigfoot. So it's like them talking to each other. So it could be some kind of a language, maybe marking out territory, or maybe just like a warning, you know, you stay away from here, I've claimed this area. Could be, maybe not. Some people think it could just be a shelter that they've made. I don't buy that. The ones that I've seen, I mean, I know some of them are very big, so I suppose in that respect it could be, but some of them seem very small for something called Bigfoot, if you know what I mean. There's a theory that it's a nesting site, so it's temporary while they're looking after young. I don't know, possibly. Another theory is it's a cultural or a ritual side to it. It's like a tradition. Maybe it's something to do with their social behaviours or just their own traditions that they have that we obviously know nothing about. So, like I say, they're all theories. Nobody really knows. People do claim, obviously, we're going to get experts in this field like we do with everything else, but nobody really knows. Now, what I have heard suggested by Deborah Hatswell from BBR Investigations, I really like her stuff. She says, if you do come across one of these, yes, take photographs of it, but walk up to it, walk up to the stick structure and take photographs of the woods around you. So while you're standing at the structure, look out the way and take photos of the area around you, because she has a theory that whoever or whatever built it might not be that far away and could actually be standing there watching you. So when you go home, look at your photographs and you might actually capture a picture of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or somebody who's into bushcraft. Who knows? But you might find something interesting. So good luck with that. Now, I want to quickly just come on to the British Bigfoot. This is new to me, which might be a surprise to you. It's not a surprise to me. There's so much of this stuff I don't know about and I am discovering as I go. So for this, I'm going to call it Googway. It could be Googwoes. Like I was mentioning, there's a lot of different names and they are coming from an historical perspective. If you look up online, you will find that this is mentioned medieval times. It's in pictures. It's on pottery. They're everywhere. So I'm starting to think that maybe it's not all made up. So the Gugwe is usually described as looking like some kind of baboon mixed with a dog, has quite a snouty face, but they're very thickly muscled and very aggressive. More animal in appearance than the kind of American Bigfoot, which is described as humanoid kind of thing. This thing is definitely described as an animal and not pleasant. So I want to give you a couple of reports that I came across. I think these were all on Deborah Hatswell's site, so credit all goes to her. And the first one comes from a report from February 2021 in the Bedfordshire area in England. And a guy was driving to work and he saw what he described as a British Bigfoot at a river called Ouse. And apparently there'd been a lot of heavy rain and this river had burst its banks and there was water in the fields. And this is a well-stocked river of all sorts of fish, well known to local fishermen. And you get lots of many different kinds of fish. And because it had flooded, there was fish actually in the field as it had flooded. So fish everywhere. And this guy, driving to work, said he saw a Bigfoot in the field. It was about 8 feet tall, at least. Said it could be 8 to 9 feet. Now, the guy doing the report was 6 feet-ish, I think maybe just over 6 feet. So he's tall and it was a lot bigger than him. He said it was covered in hair and seemed to be fishing. Now, this is a quote. He said, "You could see the long hair on its face as it leant forwards to look into the water," end quote. He said it was really thick and bulky. And he actually went back to check the area to make sure that he hadn't seen maybe a tree or a log or something and just misidentified it, checked everywhere. He said there was absolutely nothing in that area to look like what he had seen when he drove past it. And he's sure this thing was fishing for the fish that had come out of the river when it had flooded. Now, another report was from a guy. He came from a small village in Cheshire and he was around 7 years old when he had his sighting. And it absolutely terrified him. He'd gone to play in the local fields, the nearby woods, which him and his friend did quite often, and they made a den there. So he went out to go and look at his den. His friend was meant to join him later on. He said you couldn't see the den straight away. It was like down, just out of sight, so he couldn't quite see the den, but you could see trees and things around it. And he said that when he was approaching his den, he saw a huge creature. He actually thought the tree that they'd used had started to grow hair or some sort of covering, but when he looked he saw this was a creature. It was really hairy and he said he could see its chest and stomach move as it breathed. Now he couldn't see the face because of his position, but he could tell that it stood up and it was facing him. And what he did see was this creature put its hands together, like it put its thumbs together and then made a triangle with its index fingers, and a ball of light appeared within the triangle as if it was manifesting energy and manipulating it. The guy said, bearing in mind he was a 7-year-old boy, he was scared to death, and he said this fight or flight, he adds a third one in and he said freeze. And that's what he did. He absolutely froze, too scared to move. And it was as if he was transfixed to the spot. And the only thing that brought him out of it, at one point he was aware that his granddad's dog, which was a huge Irish wolfhound, it appeared beside him. And it had kind of moved just in front of him and putting itself in between the boy and this creature. And it was growling. He actually said he'd never seen the dog look like this, and it was a scary look on this dog. It brought him to his senses, though, this growling, and he legged it home. On the way home, the dog did join him, so it did get away, but it saved his life. There's no doubt he said this thing was not friendly. He got a horrible sensation from it. Now, if you want the full story, because there is quite a story to this, go on Deborah Hatswell's site and have a look for this. It does seem to be a creature that his family, or at least his granddad, knew about and took care of. So if you want to know more about that, go and have a read. But I did find it interesting that here's a boy going out into the woods, you know, just to play in a den, like I did. We all did that when we were kids, and we never came across anything like this, so I just don't know how I would have reacted, but that's what happened to him. Now, I did say there was a sighting, but a couple of sightings, not too far away from where I live. If you have listened to a previous episode I did on Scottish ghosts, you'll know I'm not far away from Culloden Battlefield. And near there, I think it's about half a mile away from Culloden Battlefield, there is a site called Clava Cairns. I've been to Clava Cairns many, many times. I love going there. It might sound a bit strange when you find out what it is. It's actually a Bronze Age burial site. So we're talking at least 4,000 years old. All the tourists go there, all the locals go there. It's just an amazing, interesting place. That's where the sightings have taken place. In 2015, there was a witness who said she saw a tall, hair-covered, human-like figure over at the cairns. There was a woman that saw it. She said the creature was 7 to 8 feet tall, said it crossed the site, Clava Cairns, the burial site, into the direction of Culloden Battlefield. And this happened when it was just approaching dusk. So you're not talking like night time. It wasn't dark, dark, but just around dusk. And she wasn't the only one. Now, she lives in that area, and there is another witness close by who, I think he's, I'm not sure if he's a farmer, but he was talking about working in the fields. So I'm assuming it's a farmer that owns the fields, said he has seen something many times in that area. So that's Clava Cairns, which, like I say, only half a mile from the battlefield. So what is this creature doing there? Is it looking after the burial site? There does seem to be a link between burial grounds and supernatural or paranormal activity. So I thought that was interesting. I wanted to make sure that I brought that to you. Now, I can't discuss Bigfoot without mentioning children. Specifically, children who have gone missing, and then when they come back, they tell a story about the bear that saved them or looked after them. And here's an example. And this is quite a recent example. It's 22nd of January 2019, Craven County in North Carolina. There was a wee boy called Casey Hathaway. You might be familiar with the story. Again, I wasn't. He was 3 years old at the time. Only about 2 foot 4 inches tall, 25 pounds in weight. About 1 in the afternoon, playing in his grandmother's backyard with two other children. I believe they were his siblings. At least one of them was a younger sibling. And they were two girls. And when they went back into the house, the family realised that Casey wasn't with them. Now, at the side of the grandmother's house is a big wooded area. So they searched that area for about 45 minutes. Couldn't find him. So they called 911, as you would. So like I say, you've got this heavily wooded area at the side of the house with, you know, pools of water nearby. So they're thinking he goes in there, you know, big chance of him drowning at least. It's January, so it's cold. He's only three. How's he going to survive? So massive search was held to try and find this little guy. In fact, so many people turned up. There was quite a few turned away because there were just too many people. You had a helicopter brought in with infrared to find heat sources. Dogs were used in the search. Drones were used. The locals were asked to search their own properties, sheds, outbuildings, you know, all that kind of stuff. Nothing. Nothing was found. No sign of this wee guy. 2 days later. Now, bearing in mind, this is January, okay? The weather's bad. It's cold. A woman who had been helping in the search takes her dogs out for a walk. When she's out, thinks she hears a child crying. So she takes her dogs home, goes back to that area, and she's, you know, standing listening. Yep, definitely can hear a child crying. Goes and gets a police officer, says, look, come with me and listen. So the cop goes, hears the child. The searchers, you know, people turn up, and a lot of people go looking. They find little Casey Hathaway. Alive, scratched, you know, a bit bruised. He was tangled in a thorn bush, but he's alive. So they, you know, they take him to the hospital. Now, when he's in the hospital, the son of the woman who found Casey went to visit him. And Casey said to him that he had spent 2 days with his best friend, which was a bear. Now, some people say, yeah, that can happen. And yeah, I've heard stories of actually, believe it or not, been doing quite a lot of research on this week. And there are a lot of stories of animals who hear children crying, and it sounds a lot like the young of animals. You know, the not kind of crying noises that they make. And there are reports of animals looking after children because of this. One report I did find was of a kid, and somewhere in Africa, I didn't write down where it actually happened, but it was somewhere in Africa. A child was kidnapped and was crying, and lions, of all things, turned up, killed the kidnapper, and actually looked after the child. I don't know the full story of how they got the kid away from them, but this mistaking human crying for animal crying does happen. However, would a bear look after a three-year-old boy in January when they're supposed to be hibernating? And if it wasn't hibernating but had just spent the last few months hibernating, what are the chances of a three-year-old surviving that encounter? Wouldn't a bear be too hungry, for example? Wouldn't a bear be so hungry after coming out of hibernation that a three-year-old boy, well, you know where I'm going with that. I just find it extremely unlikely that you're going to encounter a bear at a time when it should be sleeping and it just looks after you for 2 days. That's Scooby. Now, that story with Casey isn't the only time. And I've just got a couple more examples for you. In 1888, the New York Times ran a story about a two-year-old girl who had been missing, and she was found in a valley, and she said a bear had kept her nice and warm. Make of that what you will. Another one, 1955. It was another two-year-old. These are little kids. Ida Mae Curtis, she spent 2 days in a forest in Montana and said she was comforted by a bear while she was out there. Now, I don't know about you, but do you really think a child of 2 or 3 years old can survive, not only survive out in the wilderness for 2 days on their own, but survive a bear encounter? What's more likely at this stage? I'm leaving that question open. You can make your own mind up. And I want to round off this episode with this thing I found on the internet. I love this. See what you make of this. Have you heard of the Column of Marcus Aurelius in Rome? Right, it's a marble monument covered with carvings showing scenes from the emperor's life. Okay, fairly basic, straightforward stuff. You're going to have, you know, the warriors and all the gladiatorial kind of fighting, all that sort of stuff's on it. Brilliant. Somebody's done a close-up of this thing, and there is, carved in this monument, marble monument, a huge-looking humanoid figure, which is very clearly covered in long hair and has huge, long arms. Now, it does have a sort of orangutan appearance, but bigger. Much bigger. There are other figures near it, so I'm taking it, they're doing a sort of scale thing here. This thing's enormous. Go and have a look at that online and tell me what you think. The Column of Marcus Aurelius in Rome. I found that, and then I found all these other carvings and pictures, not just in Roman stuff, it's everywhere. There are cave pictures, for goodness sake, from the Aboriginals in Australia of the Yowie. These things seem to be as ancient as time itself, and we seem to have prior knowledge of them. If anything, I would say this is the only time in our history that we are not fully aware of these creatures. There's my theory. So there you have it. Are these creatures real? What do you think? I'll be honest, I think they are. I do, I actually think they are. I think there are too many sightings in too many places from people who, they're not out looking for these things, they just happen to come across them. They can't all be wrong. And like I said, historically these things are showing up in artifacts all over the place. So, that's what I think, based on what I've been looking at just this week. Just this week, I've spent ages looking up all. I found some brilliant sites. Honest to goodness, talk about going down a rabbit hole. Anyway, I will leave you with that. That's it for this week, folks. I will have to leave it there. Go and have a look at these things, seriously, and see what you make of it. YouTube videos, hours, trust me, hours of your life can be spent looking at this stuff. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I do hope that you go and have a look at some of that stuff and and let me know what you think. Really do. Don't forget to use the links down below. They are there for a reason and they will take you to all sorts of magical and wonderful places, I can assure you. But until next time, friends, you take care of yourself.